Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I wonder how you're feeling. There's ringing.
In 1976, a largely unknown guitarist released the best-selling live album of all time. And it was all downhill from there. This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. Today on the show, the past, present, and uncertain future of the live concert album. Plus an update on the New York City Opera labor dispute, and a visit from mezzo-soprano Stephanie Blythe, who's currently singing in the Metropolitan Opera's production of Rodelinda. But let's start with the state of the concert album. In the background, Peter Frampton, the English guitarist. He burst on the scene 35 years ago with the album Frampton Comes Alive. It was the best-selling record of 1976 and has gone platinum many times over. It was a high watermark for the live album in the world of pop music. That's a trend that goes all the way back to 1962, at least, with James Brown and his album Live at the Apollo. But in recent years, concert albums seem to have lost their mojo. Music writer and blogger Bill Wyman has been pondering the state of the live album, and he joins us on the line, as he does from time to time. Hi, Bill.
How are you, John? Thanks for having me.
In your piece on Slate, you ask, whatever happened to the live album? What did happen? Have they disappeared?
Question. It just occurred to me one day that in the 70s and into the 80s, it was a rite of passage for just about any rock band. You put out two or three records. Remember back then, bands had hit singles, whether they were black, white, heavy metal, or pop. And then after three or four of them, you put out a live album, sometimes a single record, more often a double record. You have the big hits, you have a cover or two. And it was just part of the part of what every band did and what every fan accepted. And then all of a sudden, it just seemed that they disappeared. I was trying to figure out why, and I have two minor theories. Do you want to hear?
Sure.
The first, it's kind of more philosophical.
Nothing we like better on Soundcheck than minor theories.
Right. But one, there's this philosophical thing where back then you had to be more authentic. You had to get out with the people. You had to show that you'd get down and that you could rock it on out and that you could produce live. The Beatles accepted this was expected of every band. And in the 80s, it was sort of the era of the Thompson Twins and Madonna and Depeche Mode, and there was a little bit more artifice there, and it seemed like that didn't matter anymore. The other kind of more banal reason, I think, because this is a business, is they just stopped making money. Mm-hmm. The record industry made a lot of money off live albums because they didn't cost any money to make, and if it was a double record, you could charge twice as much for minimal outside costs. And I just have a feeling that one of the things that happened is they said, no more of those things, they're not making us any money.
Although they were really cheap to produce compared to getting a band in a studio and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and back then technology was different. You basically had to pull up, I guess, what you call like a mobile studio.
Right.
Get all those lines. That costs something. And then it takes a week of mixing time in the studio, take a few photographs, and you've got an album. And back then, albums cost, $5 or $6. But you could get a 12 or 13 or $14.98 list price off a double album. And throwing the extra disc in there is just a real marginal extra production price. So they were actually making three or four times as much money off every album.
Well, that was back in the 70s when bands like the Allman Brothers helped to really define the genre, at least within the rock world, of the live concert album with their 1971 recording at Fillmore East. Allman Brothers' Whippin' Post from their live album at Fillmore East, 1971. Not only an important album as, kind of an early high watermark for live concert records in the decade, but also just, you know, it became kind of like a thing that people did at concerts from then on. Someone would yell, "Whip and post!"
It's true. And then that was eventually supplanted by Freebird.
By Freebird, yeah. Bill Wyman's on the line with us, music writer and blogger. You can find a link to his recent piece for Slate on our webpage. It's called Best Live Albums from Axl to Zeppelin. It's at wnyc.org/soundcheck. And if we were talking, you know, sort of specifically about rock, that would be one thing. Is that what we're doing here? Because when I think of, like, jazz and the importance of live recordings in jazz, it seems like that might be a separate conversation.
I think that's really true. People like me, I'm a white kid, I grew up in the 70s, and you have an interest in R&B, you have some interest in jazz when it comes to people like Coltrane or Davis and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the jazz thing has, you know, people have been putting out beautiful, wonderful, luminous live albums for many years. R&B is sort of an interesting subcategory because you have James Brown Live at the Apollo, which is still an amazing listen. And in the 70s, you get some really fun albums like Donnie Hathaway Live, Curtis Live, Marvin Gaye Live.
When
some
you
of those,
say Curtis, you mean Curtis Mayfield.
Right. And the intimacy, which I think is an underappreciated aspect of some of these, I believe that the Curtis Mayfield was in the, maybe it was like in the bitter end in New York City. The Donny Hathaway album, which I hadn't known until one of the commenters on Slate mentioned it, I think was at the Troubadour in L.A. So mm-hmm. you're seeing these very larger-than-life figures in very, very small venues, which really makes for some great listening.
Well, in fact, that Curtis Mayfield record is from the same year as the Allman Brothers, 1971, and it's called Curtis Live.
People get ready. There's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. I say you just thank the Lord. You just thank the Lord. So people get ready for the train to Jordan, picking up passengers coast to coast. Faith is the key. Open the doors and board them. There's hope for all among those loved the most.
That is Curtis Mayfield, People Get Ready, from the 1971 live album called, appropriately, Curtis Live. And Bill Wyman's with us, wondering what the state of the live album is. I mean, it's kind of ironic we're having this conversation at a time, Bill, when musicians rely increasingly on live concerts, on touring, to make a living. And lots of people are recording their concerts, and when you see a band in a club later that night, you can download the concert for, you know, for a fee. It's not the same thing as these mega platinum multi-disc sets that used to come out.
It's really true, and I almost am reluctant to talk about this because it dates me, but you want to say to these, because now you see every concert that you want to on YouTube, right?
Right.
You can see any band you want. And there was a time in the 60s, 70s, and 80s when it was just very, very difficult to actually see people. People forget that Bob Dylan appeared on television maybe twice in the 1970s. Bruce Springsteen, I don't think, appeared on television at all until the 80s. And that you couldn't get your eyes on these people or hear them. And now there's an embarrassment of riches, and it's unusual when you can't have a live recording of something, given that the viral spread of things on the illegal file sharing networks. And so I think part of my interest in it is that you really have to kind of value these almost archaeologically. I mean, the idea to sit there and hear Curtis Mayfield in a nightclub play People Get Ready, right, and then turn around and probably play Superfly. it's a thing that not that many people got to experience, and we do have these kind of records. So there is a little bit of poignance to it, that today you can just get everything you want, which I love, by the way. But you got to value these things we have from the past.
All right, listeners, do you value them? Do you have a favorite live album? We want to know. And do you think the live concert album is still alive and well? Or is it gratefully dead? You can give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or leave a comment online, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Lots of comments on the website already, so why don't we head on into the control room. Joel Meyer, what you got?
John, our listener Antonio from Mexico City writes, the live album didn't die. It simply morphed into live offerings of the concert you just attended to market that unique experience right back to you, available for download or on a cute USB drive. Tom C. from Detroit, Michigan writes, it might be an outlier or minor theory, but what about Kick Out the Jams by the MC5? And then John Stewart from NYC brings up this issue of concert patter, which is so important to 70s live albums. Stewart writes, does anyone remember laughter? And he says, Zepp was never close to being my favorite band, but this sentence should be the punchline to the question, what is the most memorable line from a live album?
Well, let's hear some other contenders.
That's one thing that's always, like, been a major difference between, like, the performing arts to me and being a painter, you know? Like, a painter does a painting, and he does a painting. That's it. You know, he's had the joy of creating it, and he hangs it on some wall. Somebody buys it. Somebody buys it again, or maybe nobody buys it, and it sits up in a loft somewhere till he dies. But he's never, nobody ever says to him, you know, nobody ever said to Van Gogh, paint a starry night again, man.
Oh, yeah. Thank you kindly. I think I bust a button on my trousers. Hope they don't fall down. You don't want my trousers to fall down now, do you?
A classic bit of concert patter. But where is Spinal Tap with Stonehenge, which is my favorite piece of concert patter? Bill Wyman on the line with us. His piece for Slate is called Best Live Albums from Axel to Zeppelin, and lots of calls on the line, more comments to get to. Dan posted on Facebook a 70s thing, the live concert album, Not Really Now. But then Jonathan, also on Facebook, wrote this. Whatever happened to the live album? I can think of at least two that have been released in recent years that are just as worthy of mention as the Allman Brothers at Fillmore East and other great live records that have been released over the years. He goes on to list REM, Live at the Olympia, and Wilco, Kicking Television. Now, Bill, in today's Soundcheck blog, I mentioned the Wilco album, too. I think it's really interesting that, you know, they took songs that they created in the studio in a very meticulous way and sort of recreated them in a completely different way in a live setting. So the live album here offers kind of a different view of songs that if you're a Wilco fan, you kind of thought you knew already.
Yeah, and it's an exquisite album, and I mentioned that in the piece, and I say it's one of the, it's probably the best live album of the last 10 years. You know, Jeff Tweedy's a really, really smart guy, and he's very acutely conscious of rock history, too, and I think he really stepped up to the challenge of making a live album that would be relevant today. So I think that's a really good example. I think the REM, while it's a welcome record, it's kind of interesting, because I try to define the classic rock album as an album that the group releases at its peak,
right.
And while that is a great show, you kind of want, you know, you kind of wonder, why didn't REM do an album, a live album at Document, you know, around the time of Document, which, you know, they were a great live outfit as well.
And this is Wilco, 2005, live in Chicago, the album called Kicking Television, arguably the band at the height of their powers.
Let's forget about the tongue-tied lightning that some dress just like cross-eyed strangers. This is not a joke, so please stop smiling. What was I thinking when I said it didn't hurt?
can hear some of the odd sounds that all come together in the long intro to this live version of the song I Am Trying to Break Your Heart by Wilco. We're talking about live albums. Whatever happened to them? What are the great ones of the past and the present? What's the future of the live album? Bill Wyman's on the line with us. A link to his Slate article, Best Live Albums from Axel Zeppelin, is on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. And Ahmed is with us on the line from Jackson, New Jersey. Ahmed, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you taking the call.
Sure. So do you have a, I mean, what do you think is the state of the live album these days?
To be honest, I really like that you brought it up because I do feel that it is slipping away. And coming from a fellow musician, music lover, I really appreciate when artists put out the live albums, and specifically when they put them out on DVD, because you can get a more intimate acoustic, or they can do different versions of their popular or classic songs, and you really get a different spin, different flavor, and you get to see the creativity from the artists other than, you know, the original track recordings.
Now, that's a really interesting point. And, Bill, you know, when I think of what has happened to the live LP, which became the live CD, when you talk about a live DVD, you're talking about something very different, where you can actually get, you know, kind of a fuller sensory experience, because you're obviously seeing as well as hearing the concert.
Yeah, and believe me, as a music fan, again, as someone who grew up at a time when it was hard to see these artists, they're incredibly valuable. That said, I want to make one caveat, that I'm a little suspicious of these, what I think of as the antiseptic DVD concert. They tend to be staged to be filmed. And I, as I say in the piece, I'm suspicious of Stop Making Sense by the Talking Heads, or by Talking Heads, because even that show seems a little antiseptic to me. And what I want to see a real concert filmed under difficult conditions. Okay, and I did a story recently about Ladies and Gentlemen, the Rolling Stones, which is a filmed account of the 72 Stones tour, which I think is the apogee of that genre. And too many, even of artists I really like, you see these stage shows and they just don't feel quite real, and you just don't get that energy, and you don't feel like anything might happen. You feel like it's a very rehearsed, carefully done thing. But it's great if you're a fan. But as a work of art, I'm suspicious.
If you're a fan of Adele, obviously with her much publicized vocal problems culminating in surgery recently, you don't have a chance to see and hear her live. But now she has released both a DVD and a CD set live at Royal Albert Hall.
She ain't real. She ain't gonna be able to love you like I will. She is a stranger. You and I have history, or don't you remember? Sure, she's got it all on her. But baby, is that really what you want?
Rumor has it, Adele, live at Royal Albert Hall, not a live concert album, but a live concert DVD, giving you a somewhat fuller picture of what an Adele concert experience is like. We're speaking with Bill Wyman. He is author of this article, Best Live Albums from Axel to Zeppelin. He's been wondering what the state of the art of the concert album is, and some of our listeners have been weighing in as well, including Jack in Montclair, New Jersey. Jack, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, thanks for having me on. My memory, you know, I'm 56 years old and I'm a musician, and I love some of the new concert DVDs. There's some interesting ones that don't get a lot of mainstream play, like the Cheap Trick 25th year anniversary, and some of the new Stone stuff. But to me, the classic experience is seeing something like seeing Humble Pie in concert and then getting Humble Pie live at the Fillmore, or The Who live at Leeds. Those, or Miles Davis at Carnegie Hall, being able to listen to those albums brings me back to the whole tribal ethos of being in that group of people, having that experience, the concert experience. And the DVD is almost, it gives me too much stimulation. Huh. You know, hearing just the music lets me relive the experience.
Well, it's interesting you bring this topic up. Christopher from Bed-Stuy, also on writing on our Soundcheck page, says, a live album not only documents that show, but also documents what a band is able to do outside a studio. And he, too, mentions Live at Leeds as the perfect example of the Who in their element. So, Bill, Jack is raising this question, you know, can a live album really capture not just the sound of the concert, but the feeling, that tribal feeling of being in a community of people brought together by the sound of this band?
Right, and I think the answer is it unquestionably did at the time. And it was all people really had. It's funny they mention Humble Pie.
Right.
That's a band that's entirely forgotten today. But
except
boy,
for Peter Frampton.
Excuse me?
Except for Peter Frampton.
Right, that's true. But Steve Marriott is really forgotten that, you know, what a great voice he had, what a great undeniable performer he was, and what a great guitarist as well. And I think that's something those bands can say. And another thing we have to remember in this pop culture saturated world, that back then a lot of these bands were inventing it as it went along.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I always say about the Beatles, the Stones, Dylan, of course Elvis Presley, is that a lot of the people who bought one of their records, they'd never done anything like that before. So the people who bought the Doors Absolutely Live or the first Dead album or Fillmore East that we heard earlier, they hadn't really done that before, so it was all kind of a new experience, and it's kind of amazing that an album like that, Allman Brothers record, 40 years later, I thought that just sounded great on the radio just a little bit ago, didn't you?
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, the Doors Absolutely Live. That was the first time I ever heard Kurt Vile's music, you know, their cover of his Alabama song on that album.
That's hilarious. There really is some really odd thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Odd recordings on some of these albums. You got to give them credit.
So let's see what some of our Soundcheck listeners have been doing on the Soundcheck webpage. Joel Meyer, back in the control room.
John, two really interesting observations on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. A listener in Brooklyn wrote, I found that some artists would release more live albums than studio albums, which sometimes was an indication of a deficiency in their songwriting ability. For example, Ted Nugent. And Jim B. posted this really interesting one, I thought. Jim wrote, in my opinion, the why of live albums entirely has to do with the value of improvisation to jazz and rock. Just as live recordings of Charlie Parker, jazz's greatest improviser, are considered as irreplaceable records of genius, rock bands such as the Grateful Dead and Quicksilver Messenger Service became known for extended jam sessions that offered a deeper musical experience than studio albums.
Well, you know, this sort of goes back to something I was asking you about before, Bill, which is, you know, in jazz, it's completely different. I mean, it's music made in the moment. You have to question some of the live albums, though, where it just sounds like the band is trying to play its records, because you're never going to be able to get that. You know, that seems to be where the format has a problem, a kind of thinness of sound, unless you take it back in the studio, which famously Cheap Trick did with their Budokan record, right? And they gussied it up after the event.
Right, we have to mention that a lot of these things were overdubbed later on in the studios. There's a lot of really interesting evidence you can hear over the years of how even some famous records, they just sound a little bit too good. But even if to go back to Fillmore East by the Allman Brothers, there's no way they can redo that in the studio because that is improvisation.
Right.
You can feel the jazz thrust of it and things like that. So as far as being too antiseptic back then, Eagles always wanted to try to recreate their albums perfectly on stage, which was a relatively legitimate attempt given how beautiful the records sounded, how good their harmonies were. But again, back in the 60s and 70s, you didn't get that too much because the whole point was to give a rawer feel. And you felt a little cheated when you kind of saw a song on a live album that was basically the same length or even shorter than the studio version. You think, oh, well, that's just a... They just slammed through that
one.
Yeah,
that didn't happen with the Grateful Dead or later with Fish or some of these other bands. Bill Wyman's article for Slate is called Best Live Albums from Axel to Zeppelin. It's on the Soundcheck page. Check it out, along with all of the comments that have been streaming in at wnyc.org/soundcheck. A little bit of Cheap Trick. live, quote unquote, at Budokan from 1978. Yes, it was live, but then post-produced later on to within an inch of its life. Bill Wyman, thanks for speaking with us again. Good to have you back on Soundcheck.
John, thank you very much. It's such a great topic, and I really want to thank all the commenters and the callers as well.
Comments are online. Check them out at wnyc.org/soundcheck.